Hello and welcome to the Gitex Impact podcast series, bringing you the latest sustainability trends and tech innovation advancing the world's net zero carbon future. 2023 is the year of sustainability in the UAE, and the decarbonization agenda is taking hold in boardroom meetings, or at least the conversation has certainly started as organizations navigate a potentially complex landscape of laws and regulations in their green transitionary journeys. But the good news is, there are helping hands out there, and a carbon neutral or even carbon negative future doesn't have to be so daunting. Our special guest today is Nadia Boumezioute, Head of Sustainability and Information Governance at Zurich Insurance, who will be discussing a practical guide to achieving net zero goals. Nadia, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So a net zero future for organizations, it might seem like a daunting task, but how can our companies set the right intention and commitment towards being carbon neutral?
I think net zero seems like such a big target and almost unachievable when you really think about what it means. But I think what's important is that companies set clear goals and targets, that they develop a comprehensive strategy that covers all aspects of their business, not just the sustainability department or certain aspects of it. It's important to also engage with all the stakeholders around, so not just within your organization, but also all stakeholders outside of it. And then to measure, track, obviously, your progress and stay on task and set milestones.
So you mentioned practical steps. What are some of those sort of practical steps that companies can take, especially if they're just starting on their on their journey, on the green transitionary journey to be net zero? Examples of some of these practical steps that companies can actually make.
So I think a good place to start is to kind of conduct a sustainability audit to see where you stand. And there are tools available online to kind of go through a questionnaire maybe and see what are you already doing that is aligned to sustainability goals. You can use the UN SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals, as a as a guide, and then see what are we already doing and measure that internally to have a baseline to see where you start. And then identifying areas where you can have the biggest impact, where you can reduce emissions quickly or with little effort, and that can take you one step closer to your goals. I think we all have to acknowledge that this is a journey. And I know this term has been overused, journey, transition, but that's what it is. I mean, to get to a net zero goal, there are steps to take in between. And sometimes you have to start with like a small step that can take you further forward.
Okay. What is materiality assessment, and how can it help companies identify their most significant environmental impacts?
So a materiality assessment is, as it says, helps to identify the most significant areas to focus on for an organization along environment, social, and governance topics. The way it is conducted usually is that you send out a survey to all of your stakeholders. Who do we mean by stakeholders? It could be your shareholders, your investors, it could be your suppliers, your employees is a big audience, customers. Sometimes, depending on what industry you're in, it could be academia or industry groups or regulators, for that matter. And you collect that information and identify what are the most material and most important issues to your stakeholders, and then align them with your priorities. And that's how you can identify key areas to focus on. We conduct those usually every 2 to 3 years. That's what's recommended. And it really helps you to narrow down the topics to focus on first.
What's the sort of timeline? If I'm starting from scratch, you know, I have no, at this point, if I'm CEO of a company or a board or whatever, and I want to start this journey, I mean, from zero, from nothing at all to actually reaching that net zero future, I mean, what sort of timeline are we looking at? I suppose it varies.
It varies, right? I think most companies set a net zero target for 2050. That has been like the common goal, whereas there is a 2030 intermediate target. There are certain goals we have to achieve by 2030 in order to even get to net zero by 2050. And these have to be identified. how long does it take for a company to implement that? Really depends a bit on the size of the company, but also on the appetite. And it's so important that senior leadership is aligned, that the board understands the importance and makes it a strategic priority for the organization. So a sustainability strategy is really part of your business strategy. It's not something separate or something that you can do in isolation. It has to become part of your business strategy.
What is Zurich Insurance's approach to driving and supporting a net zero future?
So for us, we have set targets, obviously. We have net zero targets. We aim to be net zero within our own operations by 2030, which is quite ambitious. And net zero overall, meaning within our investment portfolio as well, by 2050. In order to achieve that, we have set intermediate targets and milestones that we set out to achieve. We're also engaged with industry groups, with other stakeholders to collaborate on those issues and push the agenda forward. I mean, two areas that we're particularly focused on is climate risk, obviously. As an insurance company, risk is a very important area to focus on. Yeah. And the second one is the investments that we have. So all the premiums we collect are invested. Where do these investments go? How do they have an impact? Do they have a positive impact? So that's something that we're also looking into now.
Okay. And obviously, as an insurance provider, I'm sure Zurich would have seen firsthand accounts of the financial and human costs of, you know, natural disasters, for example, which could be seen to be exacerbated by global warming. What role is the insurance industry as a whole in addressing impacts of climate change, and how is the industry currently adapting to the changing climate that we're currently living in now?
So, the top area is probably climate resilience. So how do you build resilience towards climate-related impacts? These are natural catastrophes. We've seen a lot of floods and wildfires and so on.
Drought.
So, yeah, droughts as well. All of these have an impact, right? So what insurance companies focus on, obviously, is on one hand financial protection, and on the other hand, building risk-related climate resilience. So these are two areas that we work on. And as insurance companies, we've collected a lot of data over the years about natural catastrophes, the impacts that it has. And we can work towards working with our clients to building resilience, then offering potentially lower premiums that's an idea overall in the insurance industry, offering lower premiums for example, for properties that have risk mitigating measures in place to protect from floods or wildfires. These obviously would be prioritized. So there may be pricing differences in the future that we'd look at, because we also have to, you know, protect the insurance company and the risk that is related to that.
Whistleblowers have accused the ESG, environment, social and corporate governance industry as just greenwashing. Obviously, there are trillions and trillions of investment in the ESG sector now from a financial perspective. Greenwashing, how would you counter this claim?
I'm not sure I want to counter this claim. I think it's good that you know, these things are brought to the surface. Are they always justified? I'm not sure. I tend to believe that companies don't set out to maliciously greenwash in that sense. I think we're all still figuring this out, right? Sustainability, ESG, all of these climate change related impacts are still so new, and it's moving so fast. We're all trying to figure it out. That's not to excuse anyone. What I do feel like it's important to point it out. It's important to find solutions and to improve. It's important to communicate and be transparent about the journey. So for us also, it's important to openly declare, here are our targets. Like on Zurich Insurance's website, you will find our targets.
Yeah.
You will see how we track on them. I think that's very important. And greenwashing as such also needs to be defined. Like within what parameters do you say this is greenwashing? Or was just a lack of governance, you know. In general, it's a lack of governance. But you know, and also create frameworks and policies that help companies, you know, define what do we need to pay attention to, what is green and what isn't, because there are still discrepancies, and some frameworks are not clear, or there are so many frameworks you don't know which one to follow. So I think with more consolidation around those frameworks and regulations, it will help also mitigate those instances.
Sure.
But we need to talk about it. Yeah. You know, I mean, companies can't claim something that ultimately shows it's actually not having a positive impact, yeah, or it's covering up for something else. You know?
And I suppose the good thing is as well is that we do have time, right? 2050 is still quite a long way away. Are those goalposts going to be shifting as well, or will we reach that point, or will companies by and large, government, public, private, will we reach that sort of net zero future before 2050? Will the goalposts shift even further? Will it be 2060, 2070?
I hope not. I think it's good this target has been set. Mm. Because then you can work backwards, right? You can work towards it. Whether the goalpost moves, I don't know. I think this year will be a significant year with COP28 being here.
Yeah.
And this COP is the first global stocktake since Paris. And I think it's significant. This is the first time that all countries have to lay open where they stand. They have to demonstrate are they on track with their targets or not? And we will see that most are not. And that will raise new questions and will also probably push for more solutions and actions, because we are behind. And I think sometimes 2050 seems so far away, and sometimes people feel like, yeah, but I don't really feel the impacts of it. But if you really pay attention, there are already impacts. You know, food, agriculture is heavily impacted through droughts, floods, and so on. And this will have a ripple effect. You know, we see supply chain issues. We see increase in prices and cost of living. There are intersections and connections to climate change as well.
Yeah. And I guess that public-private collaboration is also critical. Isn't it? Because it is, at the end of the day, driven by government. But obviously you need buy-in from private, and then, of course, end consumers as well. There needs to be a fully 360 joint collaborative effort to actually, you know, reach that net zero, fully carbon neutral goal.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it's a multi-stakeholder collaborative effort. And that is what is really important. Nobody can achieve this alone. When a country sets a net zero target, a country cannot achieve that without the private sector being involved, without consumers being involved, and without NGOs involved, academia involved. There are a lot of parties to that, right? And then also there are interdependencies between countries. So ultimately, it's really a collaborative effort for all of us.
Yeah, and the whole point of COP28 as well, isn't it?
Yes.
What about smaller companies? I mean, if you're a very large company, listed company, Fortune 500 or whatever, you've got the resources to be able to commit to a net zero future. If you're a smaller company and you still put the task, you still need to achieve these goals, how do they go about it? How do they navigate this landscape with limited resources that they might have?
Yeah, it's definitely challenging for smaller companies, because like you said, they're focused on the day-to-day. They don't have the resources, they don't know how to build the capacity internally. I think one place to start is to do an assessment internally, which can be done. A good example, for example, is DIFC recently released an ESG maturity model. And it's a questionnaire, a simple questionnaire that companies can fill in, particularly helpful for smaller companies, and it gives them a score at the end and shows them where they stand. The questions will also probe them to say, oh, we need this, we need that. Right now, a lot of small companies don't even know where to start. So this could be a good starting point. Going through the questions will inform them what to focus on. And then maybe start with something small where they can have a big impact. It really depends on what kind of service they're in. But I do think they can identify something. In many cases, small companies are suppliers of larger companies.
Yeah.
Engage with the large company. Ask them, look, we understand oftentimes the large corporates are on that sustainability journey, and have a conversation and say, you're on this sustainability journey. Can you help us? Can we work together? Can you give us some guidance on what we need to do to remain a supplier of yours, because this is something that is also happening, that a lot of large corporates are now looking into their supplier base and saying, if you're not aligned to net zero, you can't be our supplier anymore.
Yeah.
So communicate, work together, you know, talk about it. And what I find is that within sustainability, there's really a lot of collaboration, because we're all working towards the same goal. It's not, we're not competing there. This is, we're all learning from each other. And I think it's great to see that. And this could really help smaller companies.
Sure. Communication is obviously critical, right? When it comes to talking about sustainability efforts, but how actually important is it? And you know, communicating with the stakeholders, obviously internal, external, that piece, how important is the communication piece in achieving and building towards a net zero future?
Communication is critical, really. And it starts internally, really. Mm. You have to engage your employees. They have to understand
the journey. Got to buy in, right?
Yes. You need their buy-in and you need their understanding of the journey that you're on. In many cases, upskilling is required internally in multiple areas of your business. But then externally, obviously, it's also very, very important. Setting a net zero target is not enough. Mm. You really have to demonstrate that you have a plan, that you know at least somewhat how to get there, and then communicate transparently about it. And also, I feel like, be honest that you're not there yet, but you're on a journey and you're taking the right steps to get there eventually, right?
I suppose those little milestones along the way.
Yes.
To actually achieving it, from my point of view, it would be quite important.
And I think that's also where reporting and disclosure comes in. So publishing a sustainability report or ESG report, as you would like to call it, is very important, because it covers all of the key areas and the key data points that are relevant. And then you can, over time, demonstrate improvement, right? So if you compare last year's to this year's, generally in a sustainability report, you will show 2-3 years next to each other. So it'll show that you're actually progressing. And I think showing progress is important. Nobody has it figured out perfectly yet, but be transparent about your journey, where you are, and demonstrate that there's progress.
Are there incentives to incentivize companies, governments, people, consumers to be more sustainable? Aside from obviously being better for the environment, but what other incentives, or is that ultimately the ultimate incentive, I guess?
I think today, currently in this market, they are not there yet, but I believe that the government, having made such strong commitments, will certainly look into potentially incentives, possibly also further regulations or policies, requirements for the built environment for certain industries. I would imagine that the government is looking into something like that, because if you see Europe has led the way really when it comes to sustainability, and that's a lot of what's happening there is legislation, frameworks, and then also incentives, you know, and I think this will work hand in hand.
Yeah. Nadia, I can tell that you're obviously very passionate about this topic. How did you actually get involved in sustainability and this sort of journey that you're on now?
That's a very good question. So I think many years ago, I didn't even know what sustainability was. You know, back in the days, you would talk about CSR and this. So I was actually, I was working on a project that focused on financial inclusion and financial literacy, which is one of my other passions as well. And through that, I somehow landed on sustainability, because financial inclusion, financial literacy is part of, if you look at the Sustainable Development Goals, it's part of like quality education and so on, no poverty, gender equality. You know, financial inclusion really covers a lot of those topics. And that's how I came to it. And then I educated myself, and I'm still educating myself. I'm on a journey. And I just developed a passion for it. And I believe that that's the right way to do business, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And you, of course, will be speaking at GITEX Impact in October this year at the Dubai World Trade Center. Too early to say exactly what you're talking about, but just talk about the importance of events such as GITEX Impact and in advancing the world's net zero carbon future.
Yeah, I think it's very important. I think it's important to bring together companies from various sectors, technology. I'm a geek. I'm a firm believer that technology will be a great enabler for the sustainable development and transition. Mm. We will need technology in many areas, be it climate tech or agri-tech, but also for transparent tracking and measuring within supply chains, for example. You know, I think technology will be an important factor. So for GITEX to bring this together, I think is very timely. And then just before COP28, I'm sure this will be a very important event.
Yeah, should be some interesting and exciting pledges, hopefully, to be announced.
Well, let's hope so, yes.
Let's just recap again. We spoke about what companies would need to do but to achieve net zero, but let's just to wrap up the conversation for a company and or I'm a CEO or a chief sustainability officer, I need to achieve carbon neutral by 2050, carbon neutrality by 2050. What are the step-by-steps I would need to take in order to do that?
I think step one is measure where you are today, create a baseline, understand where your emissions are within your organization. Mm. Oftentimes people don't know where their emissions are. I mean, in most cases it will be in your energy consumption,
yeah,
predominantly. But it's important to know where you stand. Mm. Where are your emissions within your company? And I would also like to add, don't just focus on the environmental aspects.
Yeah.
The social and governance aspects
Absolutely.
Are also really,
ESG,
really
right?
important. Yes, exactly. Mm. Although I don't really, I feel like ESG is too narrow. Sustainability is a bit broader. But the social aspect, labor rights, human rights, diversity and inclusion, employee well-being, these are also very important topics because you can't achieve one and not the others. And then governance is, to me, the bedrock of everything. Mm. Like, if you don't have proper governance within your organization, how can you ensure that you will achieve those targets, right? You have to have systems in place that govern it and that make sure that you know, all these targets can be achieved.
Yeah. It's an interesting topic with the ESG, though, because let's consider sometimes they have contradicting objectives. Mm. I'll take environment and social, for example. If I have a massive coal mine, which is obviously ejecting so much carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, I want to remove it or cancel it, cross it out, whatever. And then on the social side, of course, it's providing jobs for the communities, livelihoods. Mm. How do we balance the two when they're actually conflicting objectives such as that?
Well, I think you have to look at the entire landscape, right? So let's take the example of the coal mine. You could create other jobs. Mm. You could upskill the people. You could educate them.
Sure.
It's not like, you know, you take away the coal mine and everything else stops.
Yeah, no other job.
I think about alternatives. What else can be brought there? How can people be upskilled and new industries be built? So it's a whole ecosystem. Everything kind of works together.
Yeah.
But I think the social aspect is very important.
Absolutely.
We shouldn't neglect that. And communities are affected, right? We hear about this all the time. Mm. I think it's important to look at it holistically and not just the environmental aspect.
Mm. Mm. And on the upskilling note, on the upskilling piece, are we doing enough currently to upskill the labor force to prepare ourselves for this net zero future that we're all aiming to achieve?
I think I can't comment on that for everybody, but I do believe the upskilling has to start right at the top. Mm. So board directors need to understand sustainability and ESG well enough to be able to guide and drive their company forward, right? And then it has to trickle down within the organization. Mm. But if your leadership doesn't understand it, even if you upskill employees from within, it may not be sufficient. So it has to really come from the top. But I also feel there are opportunities across the business. Like it touches every part of the business and everybody can do their part to learn something and to upskill. And there are many free resources available, by the way. Great free courses that are available that give you a base understanding. And then also courses that go into like industry specific requirements. Mm. We do see that especially the younger generation is very much clued on to it and they want to. And
they even seem to be a lot more sort of conscious about
this. Yes, and you know, a lot of young people actually choose the organization they work for, based on this, they will ask, what's your purpose? What are you doing for climate?
Your values.
Yes, exactly. Are you actively doing something about it? And they will choose where to work. And I think we can see this now to attract talent in some industries, they'll have to work a little harder to demonstrate that there's, you know, commitment to sustainability and climate change.
Final question. How excited are you about the future of ESG or sustainability, environment, social, corporate governance, this industry as a whole moving forward as we look to achieve a net zero carbon future by 2050?
I'm an optimist. I wouldn't be in this role if I wasn't an optimist. So I believe that we can make a difference. I truly believe that. And I also believe that more and more people will realize that it's a necessity. We don't have a choice, and we don't have time. Yep. 2050 seems far away, but really it's like moving at a very, very fast pace. And my experience has been when you speak to people and they have children or grandchildren, by the way, grandchildren more sometimes, because grandparents have a bit more time, and they suddenly realize, oh my God, what kind of world are we leaving behind? Mm-hmm. You know, I do think more and more people are realizing that this is serious. And yes, you have the deniers, and let them be there as well. It's good to have people challenging, you know, it also helps the conversation. It sparks more dialogue, hopefully. But I think I'm hopeful. I do believe we can make a difference.
Nadia, it's been a pleasure having you with us, and thank you for your time. We look forward to seeing you at Gitex Impact later
this
year.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
So there you have it. Nadia, of course, will be speaking at the inaugural edition of Gitex Impact, the Middle East's largest event for sustainability, tech, innovation, ESG strategies and services. It will take place from the 16th to the 20th of October at the Dubai World Trade Center, which means it is, of course, co-located with Gitex Global, the world's largest tech and startup show, and Future Urbanism, another debut show, which will be the region's trailblazing smart city technology summit. Do stay tuned for more developments and updates. You can subscribe to our newsletter and podcast at giteximpact.com. And of course, don't forget to follow us on our socials at Gitex Impact. Goodbye for now.